12.
All right, y'all know what time it is. It's every other Friday. Again, you know what time it is. My name is Unkwa Sonye. I'm back in my bag again. I am proud to be joined by a good brother of mine. Usually you can get used to every preamble from me, and you're going to get one here. I was privileged enough to go to two private schools, one being the Stony Brook School and the other being Lawrence Woodmere Academy, which ends up meaning a lot to me, not just because if you've been following me for a little bit of a while, you know that Lawrence Woodmere Academy is one of my alma maters. It's also where I got my, well, now brief tenure coaching both the JV and the varsity teams. And sitting across from me, my brother, Cody Pierre Gillis, who is still doing his thing with that program. Thank you for joining us. How is everything?
Everything is good. Everything is good, my brother. Appreciate you having me here. You
know? So just for backstory's sake, I was never really the hooper in high school, but one thing I always remembered about Cody was that ball was everything to him. How did that translate for you after we were done at LDub?
Well, for me, my backstory is a little interesting, is that I was never the most athletic kid. I was never, you know, the kid who can jump or the fastest, but one thing I always had, I had a weird obsession with sports, and especially a weird obsession with basketball. And just being a kid, always wanting to learn, it helped me later in life, and it's why I am where I am today.
When we talk about, you know, where you are today, I want to know, because Coach Jeff Weiss has really been a mentor to the both of us, but especially to you, as you've sort of been really into the program. Talk about, like, what your relationship with him is like.
I can't explain enough how grateful I am to Coach Weiss. It's just, he was the first person to really give me an opportunity. He was the first person to really let me explore my passion and let me, you know, use my gift to this game, use my gift to help kids get better, help mentor kids. And I came into this program just looking to help out, and just being around, staying in the gym, staying with doing what I love, it's opened so many doors for me today. So that all started with Coach Jeff Weiss just giving me an opportunity, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Take me through what basketball feels like to you, just like when you're on the sideline, because people see the game in a lot of different ways. Break down, at least for the audience, what you see when you look at a game.
So it's high octane. It's like high energy. Like it makes me feel like there's nothing else that would make me feel the way basketball feels. And being on that sideline and being so engaged in the game, and I see it from a strategic standpoint, especially coaching. I see it as, you know, I see it as a way somebody would see playing chess or trying to be one move ahead, or just seeing what advantages we have and what disadvantages we have. So I don't know if that really answers your question.
it answered it enough. I feel like these days, especially when it comes to high school, people are really infatuated with strategy, with like sets and play calls, but you tend to keep things simple. Why is that?
Because that's a great question. And I feel like we have an oversaturation of coaches who want to call set plays and things like that. I believe in the kids. I believe the commodity when you're on the basketball court is your players. So the only thing I could ever do is lose a game. Players win games, coaches lose game. So the simpler I keep it, the more I teach you how to actually play basketball and play basketball the right way. Sharing the ball, movement off the ball, it makes your kids better in the long run. It creates your commodity is better in the long run.
I want to go into that just a little bit more, particularly because we see a lot of whether it's the pros or the college kids, these days a lot of people want to play with their friends, and that really matters. So how, as one of the mentors, does that factor into keeping things running for a program?
I don't think it's a problem, people wanting to play with their friends. When people say that playing with your friends it makes the game less competitive or things like that, I don't see that at all, because I see kids, especially now, us as millennials, like mm-hmm. us being so interconnected and being able to talk to each other all the time, phone, social media, I think it's a great thing that these kids want to play together. I think it's a great thing when great players want to play with other great players. It's more fun that way.
Now, do you think, because I tend to feel like there's a lot of a big power dynamic, especially when it comes to high school sports. You always want to show that you're in control of the kids and stuff like that. Do you think part of that kickback is also because maybe administrators and coaches feel like they don't have the control that they used to have?
Well, I think that has to do a lot with ego, and it depends on what are you in this for? Are you in this for your kids, your players to become the best basketball players they can be, or are you in this for yourself? Are you in this so everybody can see what a great coach you are? Can't be a great coach without great players. I'm more into Jimmy's and Joe's than I am X's and O's, and I think once you invest in those Jimmy's and Joe's, like it's always gonna come back tenfold. Not to say that the X's and O's aren't important, because that you also need to show that, like that's how you teach your kids how to play the games. We just don't oversaturate it with play calling and things like that.
I picked this phrase up from you heavy because I tried to use it with my JV kids when I was running it, and it was always trying to get them just to be aware and just to be into the game. But once I heard "bring me my energy," I said, okay. Where'd that phrase even come from?
That's just the competitive nature in me. I love to compete. I love to compete, and that's probably why I'm so good at what I do, is because I love to compete. I love it. There's nothing that brings me more joy than competition. And when I say like bring me my energy, it's just you have to bring that with you. You have to bring my energy with you. You have to bring that sense of wanting to compete with you and be disciplined and play basketball the right way. So
I have to bring him up particularly because it's not often, especially for a school that size and also just in general Long Island, having two fantastic players on the roster and being able to mentor them. That's really where, not just that you're able to mentor them, but also keep them there when they probably could have gone elsewhere. Tell me a little bit, especially about Aiden, who's committed to Louisville, Aiden Egehan, that is, and then Tyler St. Fursey, who's going to be going to Marist in August as well.
So I was blessed when I came in to Lawrence Winmere that we had kids with that showed signs of greatness, that showed potential of greatness. And I always felt like my job was to, whatever's in there, my job is to bring it all the way out to the forefront. My job is to make sure that when they leave Lawrence Winmere Academy, when they're done playing for me, that they are absolutely the best basketball players they can be, the most cerebral and aggressive basketball players they can be. And those two, it's not by accident. They were both also the hardest workers, and they stay in the gym. And that's what I try to preach to them, that along this route, during this process, a lot of people are going to take themselves out, and you're going to have high points, you're going to have low points, but as long as you keep working and you keep getting better, you're going to have everything you could ever want and more. And they've shown that. They put the work in.
Creativity sometimes gets lost in basketball, as you're talking about X's and O's and stuff.
Of course.
Creative-wise, that is, How do you see the game?
Creatively, when how I get to create during a basketball game is when I is drawing up plays. It's your motion offense. It's your zone offense. It's letting the ball go. It's overloading one side. It's like chess pieces. It's getting all five players on a string defensively. I always thought that watching a basketball game, you would always be able to tell which team is well coached, which team is the most unselfish, which team talks the most on defense. It's always in the little things. So creatively, that's how I see it.
When you take a look at like the state of the game today, I guess, what's a big high point for you and what's a big low point for you?
High point for me is that what makes a good basketball team still makes a good basketball team today. It's the team that plays defense. It's even though the numbers are skyrocketing, it's still the team that can get a stop at the end of the game. It's still the team that shares the ball the most. It's the team that plays together. The thing that bothers me about the game, not bothers me, but the thing I guess I really don't get is our obsession with numbers and stats. Mm-hmm. And I think that it doesn't help kids. It doesn't show kids the proper way to play basketball if you're just obsessing about the numbers. That doesn't work with me. I don't know.
I mean, it's so weird because I think there were a couple games, even on my level, there were a couple games where coaches would walk in with four or five students running iPads, clocks, like almost like a shot chart, saying where kids are making from, where kids are missing from, and I'm like,
no, that matters.
But yes. I was very kind of intrigued by that.
When I mean stats, I mean like I mean kids obsessed with I averaged 20 points and you know, like I made so when I'm saying obsession with stats, it more has to do with the scoring and the just, I don't know, we have such an obsession with people who score the basketball today, and there's so much more, there's so many different ways you can affect the game than just getting shots up. And I don't think the way kids like see like the ISO ball, dribble, 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 shot, it doesn't translate. And the people who are doing it now, they had to earn that. So like, for example, like watching James Harden, he's incredible. He's probably the best ISO ball player I've ever seen in my life, but it's impossible to emulate that. He is the first player to ever play like that, and mm-hmm. probably will be the last. So if you see that and you think that that's the way to play basketball, you're going to be selling yourself short. And the fact that the basketball community really, really feeds into that today, like with, you know, just every time you see training to score, well, a lot, you see it to score on the ball. So, and there's different ways to affect the game. Like Klay takes 11 dribbles and has 60, so. Not everybody has to play one way.
Taking that into account, I already know, we've talked about this before, LeBron James is your favorite player of all time. I'm very taken with the fact that he is exerting so much influence in the way that players make decisions. And I'm also just as intrigued that the owners are sort of terrified of it, in a sense.
And I also think we need to be weary of mm-hmm. that, because again, we are, as a society, we tend to fall in love with the exception mm-hmm. and not the rule. You know, there's one LeBron James, and we've never seen, well, at least in our generation, mm-hmm. like we've never seen a player wield this much power organizationally. And so we can't look at LeBron and say kids are gonna be like that, or you know, like the players have the power. Certain players have the power, You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's not everyone.
Yeah, because Kentavious Caldwell Pope certainly can't call them shots.
Yeah.
Funny, it's just random. I bring up KCP partly because I saw him play in college his senior year. He was touted as a lottery pick, a really good two-way player.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so interesting to me how college basketball has become like the NBA's minor league, and it's really a mixed bag. And when you, even looking at a team like Duke, Reddish is going to go in the first round. Zion's going to go number one. Barrett's going to go top five.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even try to evaluate how effective those guys can be at the next level?
Well, I think you see first, it's obviously their athleticism jumps off the board. And when you watch kids like Zion and RJ in a college game, you don't have to think too much. Your eyes will tell you that, wow, these kids they don't belong here. You know what I'm saying? They're really bigger, stronger, and faster than everyone else on the court. So sometimes you don't need to think too much. Your eyes will let you know. But things that translate from college to the pros is, do you get to the free throw line? You know, shooting translates. And how often can you get to the basket if your shooting percentage? Like there's traits that you can tell from college to the pros will translate immediately. Rebounding, for example.
Did you see the Duke UNC game the other night?
I watched literally 2 minutes of it. After Zion blew a shoe out, I was like, man, this is this is over.
And it really was.
But you know, like they'll get another shot in Durham.
The interesting thing, because when I watched that game, I caught it in the second half. I admittedly, my day was
so long. Chapel Hill, my fault.
Yeah. But when I saw the second half, I'm like, wow, they like everything was really rushed. Everything was really hurried. UNC got whatever they wanted, and I can tell that somebody out there, because it ended up being a big deal the night after when someone said, oh, Zion should probably not play another game in college.
That
I personally tend to agree.
Yeah, I agree also, but I would just say that if the kid wants to play, let him play. If the kid doesn't want to play, that's okay too. And I don't think it's a big deal. Like he's a billion-dollar asset.
That's a fact.
The day he steps into an NBA arena, probably your market value has gone up 50%. Like from day one, your ticket sales have gone up probably 100% day one.
And the crazy thing about it is people continue to say that, you know, college players don't really exhibit this much value, but there was an article in the local Missouri paper about Michael Porter Jr. when he went to Mizzou for that one season. He didn't even play for a full collegiate half, but he made the athletic department more than $2 million in ticket sales alone.
Michael Porter Jr.
Michael Porter Jr.
Who probably played two games at Missouri.
Mm-hmm. He didn't even last his first. You remember, he got injured in the first half, but Missouri was so happy that he showed up. Men's basketball season tickets were sold out by like June.
Wow. I mean, if you want to talk about what these great college players bring to the game, look no further than yesterday. The cheapest ticket price for that game was $2,990.
$3,000, actually.
So it's not that if Zion's not there. You understand? Like it's you can't. People who try to say that these kids don't bring in the excessive wealth that they do to these collegiate institutions are, you know, at that point you're lying to yourself. Like it's the facts are there. If paying these kids is a totally different story, but let's never deny that those kids bring in an inordinate amount of money to these collegiate institutions.
So let's map it out for a second. If you were to come up with some sort of revenue sharing system, even roughly, what would you try to attack?
I wouldn't change anything with the NCAA. I'll just give these kids more choices. That if the NBA has to do their job and create their developmental program. So instead of having kids go play college basketball, make the G League your development program. Don't make it look like a bad thing to these general managers and the people who want to draft these kids when they choose to go to the G League instead of college. That's really what you have to promote, is your own.
And the crazy thing is, though, even with playing for free, a lot of these kids would still pick going to college. Because first of all, you still get to be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But even I've noticed that the quality of life between playing in the G League and playing in college, it's not even close. In college, especially for the big schools, even for GW when I was there, where when administration changed, men's basketball and women's basketball, sometimes they would have those commercial flights with layovers. Nah, there were some flights that were chartered, which means for the Power Five schools, I can only imagine.
Of course. Like they still invest in their commodities. They still invest in their programs, whether that be the training facilities, how you travel. It's not like they don't put the money into their sports programs. These kids make so much money, and it's not just basketball, but football too. It's just these kids make so much money for the schools that I don't know. I don't. It's such a tough thing to figure out. But especially for basketball, what I would say is that you have the option to play for a collegiate institution, and you also have the option to go to the G League and make a little money before you get drafted. I just wouldn't like if the G League option, that these kids are looked upon negatively for doing that. Seeing that, make it seem like they're taking the easy road or something.
I don't think there's anything easy about that. Funny enough, Luka Doncic, I think we texted about it. Yes. Luka Doncic put out a tweet that said, go play in Europe. I mean, Brandon Jennings did it.
I mean, and you could see in Luka Doncic's game now how he's comfortable. He's been a professional basketball player probably since he was 14 years old. He's been playing against grown men probably since he was 14. So it's not that big of a jump when you've been playing against grown men your entire life. Not to say that overseas basketball is as competitive, or they have as good of players as the NBA, but he's been playing against grown men. And I think to a man, we would say that where Luka Doncic played last season is better than if he would have went to like Duke or Kentucky. He's playing better competition.
Not even close. And what's so interesting, because I know of people who have played out overseas, it really is totally different. And on the one hand, you do make a lot more money than the G League,
mm-hmm.
but there's just constant reshuffling of rosters, the stability that the NBA provides, at least even facilities-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close when you're looking out there. So even for those kids, you're thinking you're 18 years old, fine, you'll go overseas and play for a bit, but then it's sort of like a mixed bag.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough going over there. It's tough. I mean, even the basketball players who chose to go overseas instead of going to a big time university, it's not like they go overseas and put up big time numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Jennings struggled. He wasn't averaging 20. I think he was getting 11 to 14 points a night, and it was tough. It's not going overseas. It's not easy. I know that. It's not easy.
So as far as the rest of the college basketball landscape is mm-hmm. concerned, what's one thing you're going to be looking for the rest of this year? Because I kind of think it's really just Duke and everybody else.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's especially if Zion comes back and is healthy, I think it's Duke's to lose. It's Duke's to lose. Kentucky's playing better. Who else is up there right now?
Tennessee came out. I won't say they came out of nowhere.
Tennessee.
But I saw them play about 4 years ago. And granted, 4 years is a long time, but some of the same players are there. It's a heck of a jump for them.
Yeah, I think so too. Tennessee's been playing really well. I also think that they've had a favorable schedule up to this point. So now that they get more towards into, you know, big time SEC play, that we'll see if Tennessee is for real or not.
You know how New York is. What do you think about St. John's?
Oh man, I love St. John's. I love that entire coaching staff. I love Chris Mullin. I love Coach Matt. I love, like, it just, it's hard when you can't keep in-state kids. Like, back in the day, you know, you had the Chris Mullins who stayed home, the Mark Jacksons who stayed home, the Ron Artest who stayed home. I think now these kids want to spread out a little bit more. Like, they want to go see different things, and, you know, they don't want to be in the cold. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I just think it takes that one. I think they just need one big time kid to stay. And I think they're on the right track. Like I think Chris Mullin is a great coach. Like they're gonna figure it out.
I feel like they should be in the tournament, even though they didn't play so well against Providence, which doesn't look great, but. That whole team, getting to see them up close, like, they wouldn't be an NBA starting five, but there are, like, NBA tools, I think, in each of the kids that start. At least, where? If not roughly, but at least enough of one.
At where?
At St. John's.
Yeah.
Tools, not necessarily, yeah. Like, they're ready.
Yeah, I mean, the player who has the best chance over there is obviously Shamar. Mm-hmm. And they need to win some games. Like they need to make some noise in the tournament or something.
Yeah.
Something needs to happen for them to be talked about. Well, what? To get back into really basketball relevancy. And I think that either starts with a big time run in the tournament or just getting a big time kid.
It's just so, I will say it's nice to have them be in the news for
Of course.
Because they beat Georgetown.
I think
they swept Marquette. Like they did.
Yeah, I think that's just New York basketball in general is a little on the down right now. And it doesn't have to do with the talent. I think we have the talent here. It's just developing said talent and making sure that, you know, they're playing basketball the right way. It's not that we fall in love, especially here, especially in New York. We fall in love with, you know, like the ball handlers and the park players and that rock. I just want for New York to produce great hoopers, just great basketball players, just great all around basketball players. And I think it's starting now.
It's definitely a good place to be. Speaking of New York, Manny Machado is not going to be a Yankee this year.
Oh, man.
Instead, he went to San Diego, and I was going to be mad until I saw that he got his contract, and then I was happy again.
I mean, 10 years. 10 years is...
He can opt out after 5.
Yeah, it's a great deal for him, and I think it's a smart for the organizations who also didn't offer that 10-year deal because we saw how that turned out. We gave a 10-year deal to Alex Rodriguez. It didn't age well. I want the example of a 10-year-plus deal that has aged well. I just want one example.
I don't think there is one because A-Rod's second deal. I think the Albert Pujols deal with L.A.
Look how that
was the that
look
was
how that
really
turned
bad.
Out. Look.
Like, he can't even play first base anymore.
Oh, my God. Have they made the playoffs since he's...
They made the playoffs once. That was back in 2015. And they lost to Kansas City. They lost to Kansas City in the wild card.
Yeah, so... I mean, as a Yankee fan, and I'm no shame in a minute, that big-time Yankee fan. I'm okay that we didn't sign Manny Machado. I'm okay with that. I think... that we are good enough to win it now. I think that the Yankees have done the right job helping out the pitching rotation. Paxton was a big get. Ottavino was a big get out the bullpen. I think the Yankees have maybe the, and I don't know if this is hyperbole, but I think they have the best, maybe the best bullpen ever right now.
I don't think that's hyperbole because in essence, you have at least three closers in that bullpen.
Yeah.
And none of them are closing yet.
Exactly. Exactly. So when you're just asking your starting pitcher to go 5-6 innings max, right? Then you have at the back end, you can really mix it up and have three shut down rotational pitchers out the bullpen. I think, you know, I think baseball has shown that is the formula for winning. And again, the Yankees hit the most homers in the major leagues.
Yes, they did. They broke Texas's record this year.
Couldn't win it. So it shows you need pitching. Again, back full circle, defense. Pitching is defense. Pitching is defense. Really pitching is stopping the other team from scoring. So just like we talked about in basketball, like winning, there are standards that translate to winning, defense being one of them.
Ah, and that leads into my next question. When it comes to winning standards, what does that mean?
Well, what do you in
okay, I guess in terms of trying to establish a team to really make some noise, what do winning standards mean?
Okay, in the big picture.
In the big picture.
First of all, winning it starts with having a great culture. It starts like every organization, every business, it starts upstairs. It starts on your corporate level. So basketball wise, like if we're talking NBA, it starts with your owner and your front office. And if you have consistency there and you have a culture there that translates to your coaching and that translates down to the players. Like everything, it trickles down. So winning standards starts up top. It starts with building a great culture. Starts with being unselfish. It starts with understanding your goal, understanding your purpose as a team. Because I heard somebody say this, not everybody's goal is to win a championship, and that's baffling to me. It's, what are you in this for? If you're in this for the money, the winning is going to bring the money. Like, so you better win.
That's a good point. So where do you, in terms of everything that's been going on for you right now, where do you see yourself in the near future and then even further down the line?
I'm just blessed. I just want to keep moving forward. I just want to keep taking things day by day. Whatever opportunity comes my way, like I will assess it and I'll pick the best option for myself. But right now, I just know that I'm blessed to be in a position to do what I love, whether that is for the short term or the long term. I understand that a lot of people can't say that they had the opportunity to do what they love in their life, and I'm one of the fortunate few who, even if it was for a little while, I'm grateful to say that I really got to do what I love to do, and that's just be around a game, coach basketball, help kids get better, mentor kids, and whatever comes from that moving forward is, we'll see.
Word. Last question before I let you go. The Knicks managed to do sometimes everything wrong, everything right. So I guess it's a double-pronged question. What do you think of the Porzingis deal? And should the Knicks take a run at Anthony Davis? Keeping in mind, they still have the money for the two max slots regardless. But should they at least look into it?
Well, of course you do. Like, you have to take a look at getting a generational talent such as Anthony Davis. The Porzingis deal is, we'll see. Like, you traded Kristaps because it opened two max slots, so your return better be greater than Kristaps. You better get a player who's legitimately better than Porzingis, whether that be Durant, Kyrie and Durant, but you open that door by trading Porzingis. Now it's too early to tell, but the return better be great. And if you get that number one pick, I don't Zion's not a bad compilation, consolation prize. You know, the boy's gonna be, it's gonna be special.
Yeah, I mean, I have my Yankees, so I won't be suffering too much.
Man, I have my Giants, so.
Hey, listen, at least you got Saquon.
Yeah, I mean,
you got
the skill players.
Eli should just do the swan song, I think, and just be done with it.
Yeah, you need a quarterback.
All right, so tell the people where they can find you, where they can keep up with you.
Just my Instagram, HousCPG. HousCPG. That's my Instagram, so follow me. Appreciate you, brother. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And again, you can tune in. This episode will be on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, and on Anchor. Special thanks to my brother for stopping by. Yes, if sir. You need to reach out to me, you can hit me on Instagram, _sometimesJR, on Twitter, N_ASONYE. Let's talk back. And also feel free to leave a message in the Anchor app. See you in 2 weeks. Thanks for tuning in.